We'll get started here. Again, this is Pete Braden with Godsey & Gibb. Thank you for joining us today for our annual year-end tax update with Mark Verde. Quick housekeeping note before we get started. For those of you who have joined the meeting through Zoom, there is a chat feature at the bottom of your screen. So if you have questions that you'd like Mark to address at the end of the call, time permitting, please feel free to type in that information. Please also provide your contact information in case there's not enough time during the call for us to address it. At that time, we'll be sure to follow up with you afterwards. Only the hosts will see the questions, so none of the other participants will see your questions. So we've all had good teachers in the past who told us there are no dumb questions. So please, if you have a question, feel free to chat, type that in the chat feature. So quick introduction, Mark Verde, of course, really needs no introduction. And typically when I do provide an introduction, I talk about his undergraduate degree and master's degree in taxation from University of Virginia. But unfortunately, the football team is not having a great season, so I'm going to move on and give you a fun fact about Mark that probably many of you did not know, but Mark is a motorcycle enthusiast. He has a Triumph motorcycle that he likes to ride into work on when the weather's cooperating, and he participates in an annual charity event, the Distinguished Gentleman's Ride, which is a global event to raise money for charity for prostate cancer research. So it's a lot of fun and a good cause. And we've had a lot of discussion about not letting Mark ride the motorcycle in the month of April or maybe even March because he's got important work to do. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Mark. Again, the call will take about no longer than an hour, maybe 45 minutes to an hour. And if we don't have time for your questions, we'll be sure to follow up afterwards. All right, Mark, take us away.
Thanks, Pete. I really appreciate that. Good morning, everyone. I want to thank you all for joining us today for the 2022 year-end tax update call. And Pete was not kidding about the advice for me not to ride my motorcycle during tax season, but I actually did not have it earlier this year. So we'll see how the 2023 goes. And if those of you who have joined us in the past, this format and information, some of it will seem very familiar to you, but it is always a good need for a refresher, but there will also be some new information. So welcome back. Those of you who are new and have not joined this call in the past, welcome. And I hope you enjoy it and find it useful and have some tips that you take away from this that will be helpful to you. We'll spend about 45 minutes or so together this morning. And if you've had a chance to look through these slides prior to the call, obviously there's a lot of information there. And we're trying to focus on the parts of the tax provisions that we feel impact the majority of our clients and be the most impactful to the largest number of our clients. If we miss anything or if you have questions about anything, certainly, as Pete mentioned, there is the chat feature. We can address those as time permits at the end of the call. Otherwise, certainly reach out to your wealth management advisor or to us here in Tax and Financial Planning directly, and we'll be able to address your particular situation at that time. I'm going to go ahead and share my slides here. And for those of you who are following along, off not on the Zoom call, but following the PDF, there were two versions that were sent out. One does have slide numbers on it. So I will try to remember to prompt you to go to the next slide and mention the slide number if you are following along just on a PDF and not part of the Zoom call and participating through the telephone audio. And as Pete mentioned, I'm the Director of Tax and Financial Planning and also the CFO here at the firm. I've primarily focused on estates and gifts and trust taxation and financial planning throughout my career. And just as a brief plug for our group, the Tax and Financial Planning Group, we provide income tax return preparation and tax planning as well as financial planning services to our clients who engage us to do so. So whether it's a comprehensive financial plan or income tax return preparation on an annual basis or tax planning or tax projections, for example, in 2022, as we're dealing with at this time of the year, or if it's just an ad hoc question you may have, invariably with your quarterly or semi-annual meetings or even annual meetings that you may have with your wealth management advisors, there are always questions that come up that have a tax impact, and we are available for those questions and to join on those calls or those meetings as those types of things come up, so we can help you to understand what the tax impact can be of various transactions you may enter into. And so with that, we will get into, by way of the agenda, on slide 3, we'll talk about current tax law. There's the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, which actually has really been kind of the tax law of the land, if you will, for the last, this is the 5th year of the 8 years that this will be in place. So it's been around for a while now. We'll touch briefly on that because it does impact really all of us when it comes to our tax situations and tax return preparation. The SECURE Act, as well as the new Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, again, touching on things that are provisions from that are relevant to our clients. There's so much information and provisions within those acts, but trying to focus on certain ones for the time we have here today. Then the proposed IRS regulations regarding required minimum distributions, or RMDs, we'll talk about that. And then we'll get into some planning strategies based on these tax laws, how we can utilize these provisions to our advantage to minimize your tax liability for 2022, and as well as beyond into 2023 and beyond, because these laws will be around with us until Congress decides to change them, right? So we'll also touch on the estates and trusts side and some planning strategies there that will somewhat overlap with the individual strategies, but we'll share that as well because many of you have irrevocable trusts and are interested in gifting strategies as well. And then finally, there'll just be a summary at the end, as well as the Q&A. So the next slide here, move down a couple to slide 5, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Again, that's, you know, our current law and is effective through 2025. And essentially that lowered some of the tax rates that were previously enacted and provides preferential qualified dividends and long-term capital gains tax rates, as well as a 20% qualified business income deduction for self-employed individuals and folks that have certain pass-through entities, because this Tax Cuts and Jobs Act had provided lower tax rates for corporations. And so this 20% deduction for certain pass-through entities essentially provides that same type of tax benefit for clients who include their business activities on their individual return. Slides 6 and 7, you'll see the ordinary income tax rates and where those stand now for in the income, taxable income ranges for each of those brackets. And I didn't mention this earlier, but I'll mention now that, again, all this information in these slides, I'm obviously not going to read verbatim, but hopefully this is a useful reference tool for you to utilize in the future as well. And so this slide has ordinary income rates, the long-term capital gains rates on slide 7 that receive preferential treatment based on your income level. As you can see here, the income, taxable income levels at which you would have capital gains taxes of 15% and 20%. Once you're in the highest tax bracket, you're subject to the 20% long-term capital gains rates on those realized capital gains. And there's also, we'll get into a little bit more, is the 3.8% net investment income surtax that applies for certain income, higher income taxpayers. And so we'll talk about that in a few slides from now. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act also had doubled the standard deductions. There's no longer the personal exemptions per se. You used to have an exemption amount that would reduce your taxable income for you, for your spouse, if you were married, and certain dependent children or dependents that you may have. But those have been eliminated, but the standard deduction was doubled. So more clients and more taxpayers are using the standard deduction. So in some ways it did simplify things a bit to just have the standard deduction. However, there's still opportunities to look at itemized deductions and go through the process of accumulating those to see if that makes sense and you could benefit tax-wise for the itemized deductions instead of the standard deduction. I'll also mention that there are some slides here that will include 2023 information. The IRS recently came out with some of the inflation-adjusted 2023 numbers. So in certain places, provided it did not make the slides too busy, we included that information as well. Here we have the allowable itemized deductions. Medical expenses are still deductible, but you have the 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, or AGI. I'll use that term a lot, AGI, because that is a piece of the tax provision that tax provisions are really linked to. Your adjusted gross income can really impact the deductibility of certain deductions, as well as certain credits that are available. So there's also the state and local tax deductions, still limited to $10,000. And that includes income taxes, real estate taxes. So if you own a home and have real estate taxes, in states where you have personal property taxes for your vehicles or boat or motorcycle. In my case, you're limited to the $10,000 regardless. So that was something that was talked about a lot in the media over the first year or so when the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act was enacted, because of high income tax states like California and New York are popular examples where you were limited to $10,000 instead of your full state tax deductions. Charitable contributions were also raised to 60% of your AGI. So the amounts that you're able to deduct on your return is a little bit higher based on your relative to your AGI than it had been in the past. Another significant one was the no miscellaneous itemized deduction. So you used to be able to deduct your tax prep fees, investment management fees, and unreimbursed employee expenses. Those still are not deductible. So I wanted to mention that because that is a popular question we get regarding those. On slide 10, the net investment income tax is this 3.8% surtax on net investment income, and the types are listed there: your interest, your dividends, capital gains, rents if you have rental property, royalties if you receive those from oil and gas partnerships, other passive business activities, and those affect individuals that have income over a certain amount of, again, adjusted gross income, AGI, as you can see that on the screen there as well. And the next slide, slide 11, gives you a little bit more information about the calculation of this. And it really is something to keep in mind as you're looking at your income levels, because this is something that is what we call tax triggers, where you reach a certain income level that many of us are not subject to. But then if you have a certain amount of income, certain types of income, you may be subject to this net investment surtax. If you have required minimum distributions, your RMD, Social Security, realized capital gains, you may be bumping up against the $200,000 income number or $250,000. So just as you're thinking about raising additional capital gains, for example, or maybe even harvesting losses to lower your income, just keeping in mind that this additional surtax is a possibility for certain income levels and certain types of income. Moving on to the SECURE Act, on slide 12, this was enacted at the end of 2019. And really effective for January 2020 and forward. And the primary provisions that I want to address here, and again, it's something that's been in place for a couple of years now, the no age 70 and a half limit on contributions. So if you're still working and you have earned income, now that the required minimum distribution age is now 72, provided you weren't age 70 and a half at the end of 2019, then you're still able to contribute to your IRA. So it gives you a little bit of extra time to contribute to the IRA and before you have to start taking your RMDs at age 72. Also, the stretch IRA distributions have been limited significantly, and this is something we get a lot of questions about because there have been some changes there. You used to be able to, depending on if you inherit an IRA from someone and you're the beneficiary, depending on the type of beneficiary you are. If you're a spouse, for example, on slide 13, the timeline to distribute the funds can vary. You used to be able to stretch the distributions, which would be taxable to you each year as you take the money out of the inherited IRA. You used to have, for example, if you were 50 years old, according to the IRS tables, you may have up to 34 years to take that money out and have it fully liquidated and, of course, taxed over that time frame. But if you're a non-spouse beneficiary now, as you can see on the slide, that 34 years in the example of, say, a 50-year-old is now 10 years. And so that's significant for folks in terms of the amount of taxable income you can have in a given year for inherited IRA distributions. And we recently talked about this in one of our Wealth Management Dispatch newsletters back in October, the so-called 10-year rule. And so I encourage you to take a look at that as well. For more information on it, but that's just one planning item to consider in light of these new distribution periods, is to look at your estate planning documents, your beneficiary designations, to make sure that everything is still in line with your intentions as far as who will receive those assets. On slide 14, here's the proposed regulations, and there was a lot of confusion, or I should say different interpretations of the new 10-year rule. Some CPAs felt that you, and advisors, interpreted it that you had 10 years to distribute and fully liquidate an inherited IRA. You did not have to take money out each year in a required minimum distribution or R&D, just as long as you were liquidating it within the 10-year period. Other folks thought, well, no, I think you need to take a certain amount out every year. And to try to clarify that, back in February of 2022, the IRS provided proposed regulations for certain beneficiaries, and in particular, the non-spouse beneficiary. In this proposed regulations, they are proposing that the beneficiary take an R&D every year and over the 10 years versus waiting. Now, the calculation of the R&D wasn't specified, but one common strategy is to take, you know, it ratably over the 10-year period. So say 1/10 in year one, 1/9 in year two, and so on. And so there are some clients who have done that. In our particular practice, we've had clients that have done that. But at this point, the IRS has not finalized the regulations. They have not been signed into law. So there's still the option to defer those distributions until the proposed regulations are finalized and signed into law if they are. And this is a planning opportunity for each of you if you want to speak with your CPA or your other tax professionals or meet with your wealth management advisor or with us to talk about whether it makes sense to take distributions on an annual basis from an inherited IRA versus waiting until the year 10 and having what could presumably be a significant tax hit in 1 year, spread that over a period of years instead. And next slide 15. Just briefly, the CARES Act is something that was a law that was enacted in March of 2020 to provide relief because of COVID and the lockdowns to businesses and to individuals. We all remember, some of the stimulus checks, the stimulus payments, the recovery rebates, and those types of things that were in place in 2020 and 2021. I just wanted to just mention it in case there are any questions about those provisions. Most of them did expire at the end of 2021. They did carry in from 2020 to 2021 a charitable contribution deduction that was allowable whether you itemized or not. And at this point, that has not been extended to 2022. The only thing that from an individual tax perspective that I'm aware of that was extended was the pause on student loan payments through the end of this year. It was supposed to expire in 2021. And that was extended to 2022. Slide 16, the Inflation Reduction Act. This was signed into law in August of 2022. And again, like any other tax law, there are various interests that are provided for within these tax laws. So we'll focus in the interest of time as well as value, if you will, the objectives that we feel are the most impactful for our clients. But from kind of a 35,000 foot view, the objectives were to lower prescription drug costs, healthcare costs, and energy costs to address climate change. There's also increased tax rates for corporations. And then they mention also taxes paid by the ultra wealthy, which is a vague term and for which I really didn't find a definition. But other than reading that while the act attempts to make the law, quote, fairer, and I'm quoting this from whitehouse.gov, quote, no family making less than $400,000 per year will see their taxes go up by a single cent. So for many taxpayers, the Inflation Reduction Act will not have a significant impact on your taxes, but for this call, we'll mainly focus on the clean energy credits, many which take effect in January of this coming year, 2023. And so several of these are current credits that are essentially have been renamed and extended and improved upon beginning in 2023. On slide 17, the Energy Efficient Home Improvement Credit. This used to be called the Non-Business Energy Property Credit, and that has been extended through 2032. And there has been some changes to the amount that you're able to take as a credit on your taxes. And just a quick mention of a credit versus a deduction. Credits are very valuable relative to a deduction because you're really getting a dollar for dollar credit against your taxes. If you owe $10,000 and you get a credit of $1,000, you owe $9,000 now versus a deduction against how much of your income is taxed at a certain rate. So where you're able to take advantage of credits, they can be very valuable. In 2022, the old credit rules still apply, and there's a lifetime maximum of $500 on these improvements, but in 2023, there's going to be a 30% availability of a credit of 30% of the costs of these improvements. And there are a couple of them listed. There's things like your exterior doors, energy efficient exterior windows and skylights. And these are actually annual maximums now for $1,200 versus the lifetime maximum. So there are opportunities to have additional credits over multiple years versus reaching the lifetime maximum of $500 and then no longer being able to take advantage of the credit if you make additional energy efficient home improvements. On the next slide, slide 18, this is continuation of that same credit. There's also an annual limit of $2,000 for qualifying heat pumps and water heaters. And this is not limited by the $1,200 credit on the last slide. So there's an opportunity if you did purchase qualifying improvements could up to $3,200 in a given year. And then on slide 19, the residential and clean energy credit, again, a credit that was the residential energy efficient property credit was scheduled to expire next year. And that's been renamed and extended through 2034. But it also, this has actually been a popular one with several of our clients. It also increases the amount of the credit available to you. If you, this particular credit is for a qualified solar powered property, like solar panels on your home. In 2023, the credit goes back to 30%, which it had been in previous years. In 2022, it's 26%. As you can see there, the years 30% for really the next 10 years, and then 26% and 22% in 2034. And the credit for the biomass furnaces and solar water heaters, which used to be under this credit, is now covered under the energy efficient home improvement credit. So they made some changes there. Finally, the clean vehicle credit is another one that has been relatively popular. It was very popular early on. This is one of the longer named credits that I've dealt with. It actually started in 2009, the new qualified plug-in electric drive motor vehicle credit. It's now just called the clean vehicle credit, and it's extended through 2032. The significant changes here was the amount, not only the amount available for clean vehicles, which is similar, I think it was $7,500 before as well, but it's broken up into two different parts related to the battery and other structures of the vehicle. But it also adds commercial vehicles now, clean vehicles over 14,000 pounds, could get up to a $40,000 credit, as well as for used vehicles, previously owned clean vehicles, up to the lesser of 30% of the price or $4,000. There are some limitations, and so I definitely recommend looking at the fine print. As I mentioned earlier, the way the $7,500 credit is broken up, and based on also the retail price of the vehicle, as well as, again, here we are again, your AGI. So looking at what your income is, what the price of the vehicles are. So I would definitely consult your tax advisor, give one of us a call if you have information about a particular vehicle, or we can look at what the credit would be available to you if the credit is an important factor in making the decision to purchase a clean vehicle. So now with all of that in mind, onto the planning strategies for 2022. Right now, as it relates to the individual side, the current tax law strategy considerations, you want to maximize your retirement plan and IRA contributions, whether that's pre-tax or Roth. It makes sense to, particularly if you're in your higher earning years, your high income years, and likewise the higher income brackets, it would make sense to defer as much as you can into these pre-tax plans. I also included on this slide, as I mentioned earlier, the IRS did provide the 2023 deferral limits, so I did include those on here as well for your reference. And it may make sense to contribute to these and maximize this pre-tax so that once you are retired and presumably your income is lower and you may just have your distributions from your IRA, once you've rolled that over, your 401k or 403b into an IRA, or start taking distributions from your SEP and just have maybe Social Security, presumably you'll be in a lower tax bracket. So maximize those retirement plan contributions where you can. And one thing I did not mention, I'll just go back real quickly to the credits. I apologize for jumping around here, but there was the child tax credit that was enacted in 2021. It was a higher amount than it had been before as part of the American Rescue Plan. That has gone back to pre American Rescue Plan amounts. So it'll be $2,000 per qualifying child. I think it's children under 17 years of age. So just wanted to mention that, a $2,000 per child qualifying child credit. The Roth IRA conversions and pre-RMD distributions mentioned on slide 23, conversely to what I mentioned on the previous slide, if you're currently in a lower tax bracket and want to convert some of your traditional IRA monies into a Roth IRA at lower tax rates, either because your income is lower or also because of the tax rates currently under the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act being lower than they were previously and are set to expire at the end of 2025, there may be an opportunity to time some Roth IRA conversions to fill up some of those lower brackets, if you will, or take some RMD or pre-RMD distribution. So if you're not age 72 yet, but are in a relatively low tax bracket situation, you may benefit from taking some distributions from your traditional IRA in the current year or in upcoming years versus waiting until you're age 72. And again, that every person's situation is different. So I encourage you to talk to your CPA or one of us about that, and we can talk about your particular situation. But you also want to consider the non-tax impacts of this, right? Like your cash flow, do you need this distribution for covering living expenses? Do you have outside cash, meaning cash outside of the IRA, to pay for the conversion? Because ideally you want to fully benefit from that conversion. So you want to move, if you wanted to convert, say, $100,000 from your traditional IRA to your Roth, you do not want the taxes to come out of that and the net amount, let's call it $70,000, to go into a Roth. You would like the 100%, $100,000 to go into the Roth so that you can have that benefit maximum benefit for that deferral over time. And, and I mentioned there on the slide a couple other asset and taxable income sources to consider, because you may have Social Security, you may have a pension, you have investment income. We talked about the net investment income tax earlier. And if you add Roth IRA conversion amounts on top of that, that taxable income can impact your exposure to the net investment income tax, as well as impact on Medicare premiums. We've talked about Medicare premiums a little bit in the past, and we've actually I mentioned the newsletter earlier, the Wealth Management Dispatch. We talk about that in one of those as well. If your income is over a certain amount, you'll have what they call an income-related adjustment amount to your Medicare premium adjustment. So you'll pay more in premiums in a given year because the Social Security Administration looks at your tax return and decides based on your income for the year what your next year's premiums are going to look like. So again, all of these things are pieces to consider when you're thinking about incurring additional taxable income. There may be certainly good reasons to do it, but there may be other pitfalls that you want to consider before making those types of distributions. Slide 24, long-term capital gains. Realizing long-term cap gains at 0% or 15% rates. Better to have those rates that we still have now in case those do change after 2025. Each year, depending on, there's on the administration and certain folks in Congress are always putting forth the ability to raise the rates on capital gains. So it's never a bad thing to consider realizing those long-term cap gains from a tax perspective, or harvesting losses where appropriate. Of course, now you don't want the tax tail to wag the dog, so to speak. So from an investment management's perspective, if it does not make sense to sell, then we wouldn't want to sell just for solely for tax purposes. But that would again be something that your wealth management advisor could work in connection with us to analyze and see if it makes sense to realize more long-term cap gains. We also get into deductions in this slide, on slide 24. Again, the itemized deductions aren't as prevalent as they used to be because of the doubling of the standard deduction, but it could still make sense to itemize and go through the process of itemizing. And so one way to take advantage of itemizing your deductions is to bunch some of your deductions in any particular year and take the standard deduction in alternating years. And we mentioned on slide 24 here, bunching some of your charitable contributions. So for example, this year you may want to give a certain amount of money to your favorite university or your church or synagogue or what have you, or your favorite charity, and then to take advantage of your itemized deductions. And then next year, take the standard deduction in 2023, then in 2024, give a significant amount again to charity. So that way you're able to meet your philanthropic goals, but also take advantage of being able to itemize those deductions over and above the standard deduction. Also, donating appreciated stock, either directly or using a donor advised fund, is an effective way to provide charitable contributions and get a deduction for the fair market value of that stock and on the date that you distribute it, especially if you have low basis stock. So if you, instead of selling the stock, raising cash to give to charity and having a realized capital gains tax on that sale, you may be able to gift the low basis stock and realize that charitable contribution as an itemized deduction in that year. And then again, going back to taking the standard deduction in alternating years. On slide 25, this same bunching strategy works well for medical expenses, primarily because there is that 7.5% of HEI hurdle that you have to clear in order to be able to start deducting expenses. And so if there's an opportunity for you to time certain significant medical expenses to deduct them in a given year, for example, if you have an elective surgery that is that you need, or if you're contemplating entering an assisted living facility or an independent living facility that may have a significant entrance fee, a portion of which can be allocated as a medical expense, then you can time those expenditures in a given year and take advantage of the deductibility of those expenses as a larger number as you bunch them together in a given year, and then taking the standard deduction in alternating years. That works well for medical expenses also. There is the opportunity also to contribute to a health savings account and use that to pay for medical expenses. It's kind of an indirect way to deduct those expenses because you are able to deduct your health savings account contributions, and there are limitations there as far as the amount you can and whether that deduction is limited or eliminated because of your HEI. But that is an opportunity to contribute to your HSA and then use that to pay medical expenses from that account tax-free, taking money out of that account tax-free. So that's a way to pay medical expenses and get a deduction for those expenses. And then also new for this year in particular, evaluate the timing of the transactions eligible for the clean energy credits that I mentioned earlier. In 2023, those credits change a good bit because of the Inflation Reduction Act. And so it may make sense to wait until 2023 if you've been thinking about purchasing solar panels for your home or purchasing a new vehicle. However, some of those credits are non-refundable. So let's say even if the credit is not as high in 2022 as it would be in 2023, depending on your income situation, if it's a non-refundable credit, meaning that you get that credit to the extent you have tax liability, but you don't get a credit beyond that amount, if it makes sense to be able to essentially reduce or eliminate your tax liability in 2022 versus waiting till next year, that's a possibility as well. So again, something to evaluate and analyze the timing of those with your tax professional and see if it makes sense to wait until 2023 versus 2022. On the next slide, slide 26, under the current tax law strategy considerations, qualified charitable distributions. I've already talked a good bit about bunching your charitable contributions in order to be able to itemize those deductions on your tax return. A qualified charitable distribution, which many of you may be familiar with, is taking a distribution from your IRA, or what we call a QCD, and have it directly paid to a charity, and that being able to be done tax-free. You have to be over age 70 and a half, and the funds must go directly to the charity from the IRA. If it's made, if there's a check made payable to the charity that gets mailed to you and you deliver it, that's fine too, as long as it's made out directly to the charity. And that's available annually for up to $100,000 per year. And it's counted towards your RMD. So if you, for example, are now age, let's say you're 72 and you have to start taking your RMDs, and you have a $50,000 RMD, you don't need the money for living expenses. You typically give money to your favorite charity. You could gift, you know, a portion or all of that RMD to charity and have that excluded from your income. And that is even more powerful and can be more valuable than a deduction because it is completely removed or excluded from your taxable income and from your AGI. You know, again, mentioning AGI, that's something, the lower you can keep that, the better. Before the deductibility of medical expenses, for example, a lot of provisions, again, are tied to that number. So being able to avoid even including these QCD amounts in your adjusted gross income can be very valuable. And then finally, paying your investment management fees directly from your IRA instead of from a separate taxable account, since those fees are no longer deductible. That allows you to essentially make a tax-free distribution from your IRA to cover your management fees. In the past, some of you may remember, it's kind of old hat now, but years ago, we would have you pay all of your fees from a taxable account and then deduct them on your tax return. Since that's not available any longer, we recommend deducting your IRA management fees from your IRA, because that just gets money out of your IRA without incurring any taxes on that distribution to pay those expenses. Now, only the fees related to the IRA are eligible for this treatment. You can't deduct non-IRA or your taxable account management fees from the IRA. Just the IRA management fees are able to pay its own fees and not be a taxable distribution to you. This next slide, slide 27, check in with your CPA or tax preparer. This is really the time of year where you want to make sure that you are looking at your estimates and your withholdings. If you make quarterly estimated tax payments, you presumably have made three payments already this year. There is a fourth payment due in January of 2023 for the fourth quarter of 2022. And we recommend that you take a look at your current income and what you project for the rest of the year, because, you know, I can relay what we do here at Godsey & Gibb, and I'm assuming that most of you who work with CPAs and tax preparers do the same thing. When we're preparing your tax return, we're also inquiring about what the current year looks like. So in this particular year, we were preparing your 2021 returns and thinking about 2022 and getting an idea of what your 2022 income is going to look like, so that we could refine the estimated tax payments that you would have to make quarterly, and so that you're paying those in each quarter, or also adjust your withholdings from your IRA. When you take your required minimum distribution, we highly recommend having your withholdings for your projected estimated tax liability come from your IRA, if that's possible. And again, everybody's situation is different, so we can address those with each of you as those questions arise. But this time of year, you may have realized capital gains that are higher than what you had planned for, or conversely, they could be lower than you had planned for. So you may have paid in throughout the year so far this year enough to adequately cover your tax provisions for 2022 and may be able to actually skip the fourth quarter payment. So you definitely want to revisit your tax situation for this year and what you expect for the next month or so. I can't believe we're almost into 2023 at this point. And I list some common variables on the slide there on slide 27. But in addition to those, you know, marital status, if you had got married or divorced during the year, if you had a child, they have changed jobs, and you want to make sure that you revisit your situation so that there aren't any unexpected surprises come tax time. And also related to withholdings, in addition to the IRA withholdings, if you've changed jobs and have your payroll taxes obviously withheld, your federal and state, if that applies to you, you want to make sure that you're sufficiently paid in for 2022 from a payroll tax withholding perspective as well. And the IRS has a really good withholding estimator. If you have your recent check stub, if you're working and have a check stub and want to look at their withholding estimator, I included a link there on slide 27, but you can also Google IRS withholding estimator and the results will provide a link to that website as well. And on the next few slides, we get more into the estates and trust side. Again, some of it will be similar to the individual provisions. On slide 29, I list the tax rates there. Those were lowered also as part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in 2017. And there are only four brackets for estates and trusts, but they're much more compressed. So you reach the highest tax bracket for ordinary income once you're over $13,450. So that is something to keep in mind when you're looking at the taxable income for trusts. You still have the qualified dividend and long-term capital gains rates that are available just as you have for individuals. There's also the net investment income tax, the 3.8% that's there as well. And as you can see, it's above $13,450, not $200,000 or $250,000. So much lower income threshold to be subject to that tax. So that's something to keep in mind. And then on the next slide, slide 30, we get more into the estate tax side. For estates of decedents who passed away between January of 2018 through the end of 2025, your estate and gift tax lifetime exemption amount. Also, I use this term interchangeably, and you'll see it in different resources, lifetime exclusion amount, lifetime exemption amount. There's an annual exemption amount as well. But your lifetime estate and gift tax exclusion amount is just over $12 million now in 2022 for individuals. So really combined for a married couple between the two of you, the estate would be about $24 million. That would be excluded from estate tax, which is a 40% tax. So literally could save, this is saving a lot of folks millions of dollars. And also it is lowering the number of taxable estates. There's a form, IRS Form 706, that is required to be filed if you have a taxable estate. And that the number of estates subject to that has been lowered because of this doubling of the exemption amount. And again, I included the IRS adjusted amounts for 2023. And also the annual gift exclusion amounts I mentioned earlier, the amounts there, $16,000. It was $15,000 prior to this year, $16,000 in 2022, and $17,000 beginning next year. So some strategies to employ on slide 31. Gifting is always a popular option to get some assets out of your estate if you are interested in gifting to individuals. And if you're married, you can split the gifts between the two of you. So if you're gifting $16,000 to one of your children, and if you're married and you want to split the gift between you and your spouse, you can gift $32,000 to your child. If they're married and you want to gift to this daughter or son-in-law, to provide more for that family, that amount could be $32,000 or even $64,000 if you're splitting. So there's significant opportunities to gift monies to individuals without this exclusion amount. Essentially, you're able to gift that amount without reducing that lifetime exemption amount, the $12 million that I mentioned earlier, or $24 million. Another popular option for folks who have kids or grandkids that want to save for 529 plans, you can gift up to 5 years worth of the annual gift exclusion amount in 1 year. The IRS allows that to be treated as if it's been made over a five-year period. So there, you could gift $80,000 to a 529 plan and not have this impact your lifetime exemption amount. I know we're going over just a little bit here, so I'm going to just quickly move through these. Consider setting up an irrevocable trust for the benefit of your heirs. You will not get the step-up in basis if you do that, so keep that in mind. If you have some low basis stock that you want to leave to your heirs, they will get a step up in the market value of that once you pass away, so that will help eliminate some capital gains taxes or reduce those. So that's something to keep in mind. The portability of an unused exemption amount for an estate, this refers to if someone passes away and you're married and you think that based on the amount of your estate that you would not be subject to estate tax, but perhaps when you pass away and your estate is appreciated, you may be subject to it, particularly if the estate exemption amounts revert back to what they were before 2018, which would be around $6,000 at this point. It does make sense to go ahead and file a 706, even if it's not required, and elect portability of this unused exemption amount. We have done this for clients, and essentially that's doubling the surviving spouse's exemption amount to avoid taxable estate in some situations, or certainly to minimize it. Finally, revisit your estate planning documents, your wills, your trusts, your power of attorney, your advanced medical directives. Look at all of those with your estate attorney to ensure that they accurately reflect your intentions. Under current law, there have been, with changes to the exemption and exclusion amounts and other changes that have taken place, there may be specific dollar amounts that you had intended to go to certain beneficiaries, and that could be impacted by these changes in the law. So highly recommend that you revisit your estate planning documents to make sure that they are up to date. And so just real quickly, a summary here, Roth IRA conversions may be beneficial if you're in a tax bracket situation that makes sense to take those now. Maximize your contributions to your retirement plans in your IRAs while you're still working, realize capital gains where that makes sense to take advantage of the lower rates, but be aware of those surcharges like the net investment income tax and impact on Medicare premiums. Consider bunching deductions where you can, the charitable contributions and the medical expenses. And if you're considering some clean energy home improvements or buying an electric vehicle, think about the timing and the impact of the credits for 2022 versus 2023 and beyond. And then looking at QCDs, again, charitable gifting strategies from your IRA, reviewing your tax withholding and your quarterly estimated tax payments. And then again, looking at your tax estate planning documents to make sure that everything is reflecting what you want it to reflect, and think about the portability of an unused exemption amount and filing an estate tax return to take advantage of that. With that, we're at the end of the presentation. I know I ran over just a little bit, and I know your time is valuable, and I appreciate you staying with us. I know it's a lot of information and a lot to go through really quickly. If I missed anything or if you have any questions, we'll take those at this time. I will say that I did get a couple of questions in advance when we sent out the invite and had some slides that somebody looked at the slides and they also asked about. I have a couple questions that they had asked about, so I'm going to address those now. One was related to donations and had asked about that we cover any changes that may have come in that area. And to address that, I'm not aware of any changes as it relates to donations other than, as I mentioned earlier, the charitable contribution deduction that was available to folks even if you did not itemize is no longer available. I did talk about current law related to charitable contributions and QCDs and gifting to charity as well as individuals. So, but if I didn't get to your question, I apologize, and we can address that outside of the call. If you want to reach out to me directly, we can certainly chat more about that. The other question I had received was related to the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Do you expect this to be extended? As I mentioned earlier, we're in the fifth year of this eight-year timeframe for that act, and will that be extended beyond 2025? Because even with the change in administration at the end of 2020, there was concern about these tax cuts going away at that time. They haven't yet, but Congress could act at any time, right? So my personal prediction is that most of the provisions will be extended, particularly if there's a change in administration in 2024. But that being said, there was a recent article that the Congressional Budget Office had come out with saying that if these Tax Cuts and Jobs Act provisions were extended, that would cost about $2.2 trillion over the next 10 years. Well, really from now, so through 2032. And really up to $2.7 trillion if you include the business-related provisions. So regardless, there's going to be some significant changes, and I would imagine they will be either dealing with planning for the expiration of those, if nothing changes between now and the end of 2025, or some additional congressional actions taken to offset some of these extensions if they are indeed extended beyond 2025. But I anticipate that there will be a lot of discussions between CPAs and other tax practitioners and our wealth management advisors with our clients in 2025 to help best position our clients for weathering whatever the inevitable changes are that come our way. And of course, we'll keep you up to date as we learn what those changes are. And with that, I've reached the end of what I was planning to present and the questions that I had received ahead of time. I'll turn it over now to Pete and see if we had received any additional questions, and if it's something that we can answer on this call, great. If not, then we can reconvene one-on-one afterwards.
Great. Thank you, Mark. We have not received any additional questions beyond the ones that we received early. So thank you for that. Okay. I want to thank everybody for participating today. Mark, thanks for all the great information you provided. The webinar has been recorded. So if anyone jumped in late or got distracted and missed something during the course of the webinar, it is recorded and will be available in about a week's time. So again, thank you all for participating.
Great. Thank you all so much. Take care.